Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
All I know is that I was robbed of everything. My mother died inside, and I needed her. You know, nothing was ever the same. My entire family just sort of died, and we all just went through motions of life, and, you know, it was horrible for a really long time. She never had her first kiss or fell in love or had her heart broken. I realize she's at peace in heaven now, and, you know, if I act right during this life, I'll get to see her again, but it doesn't change anything that my children don't know her. You know, it's my hope that in the end I win this justice for Brandy, that I fight until I couldn't fight anymore, and in the end I win, and then it's just over. You know, I can come to my mother and say, we got him, it's finally over, and then maybe she can heal.
On May 26, 1992, 13-year-old Brandy Myers left her Phoenix apartment to go door-to-door to raise money for a bookathon fundraiser for school. Brandy never made it back home. Many searches were conducted to locate Brandy, but no trace of her has ever been found. Brandy's sister Kristen was just 11 years old when Brandy went missing, but she continues to carry on the fight for justice, which today seems so close, but just out of her reach. You see, back in the early 90s, several other young women went missing and were later found murdered very close to where Brandy disappeared. One young woman's badly decomposed body was even recovered during the search for Brandy. Is it possible that they could all be connected? I'm Marissa, and this is episode 118 of The Vanished, Brandy Myers' story. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey, and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. Before we get too far into this episode, I'd like to warn you that this will be a more graphic episode than what you're used to hearing on this show. I remember a time when we used to go door to door to sell things for school. I never thought too much about the potential dangers at the time. Nowadays, most schools discourage kids from doing this because it just isn't safe. Back in 1992, Brandy was living in an apartment with her family, and she attended Sunny Slope Elementary School. Brandy and her younger sister would walk to and from school together each day. They would often play together with their friends in the neighborhood, a neighborhood that we now know had a predator lurking within. On May 26th, Brandy set out to go door to door for her school fundraiser. Her sister Kristen told me about the last time she saw Brandy.
My name is Kristen Thalen, and Brandy Myers is my sister. May 26, 1992, her and I were playing outside, and we had planned to go knocking door to door in our neighborhood to collect money for a bookathon that she had read the books for. And prior to this day, we had gone door to door and collected pledges, and you'd sign your name on a paper, and we would come back to those addresses and collect the money. So for some reason, we didn't have the address sheet, but it wasn't like that big of a deal because every house that we hit, was on the route that we would take to school. So it was about three blocks away to our school from our apartment. This day I had a little boyfriend. I told Brandy that she was a nerd and I couldn't be seen with her. And I stayed behind with this boy named Dustin. To be honest, those words have just haunted me all of my life because they were the last words I said to her and she never came home.
Brandy's mom was at work when she disappeared, but when she came home that evening, she alerted the police.
Most immediately, my mother was at work, so she didn't come home until late in the evening or sometime in the, it was dark at least. Brandy went missing in the afternoon, early afternoon. I don't think the police or anybody was called until, later when my mom got home. She was like, told the babysitter, what do you mean Brandy's not here? The police weren't really looking in our neighborhood because they talked to the people in our complex and that girl told them that her statement is that they went to Smitty's together. The girl needed to use the bathroom and Brandy didn't want to go to the bathroom with her. So she stayed outside. And when the girl came out of the bathroom, Brandy was gone. That's why, she was last seen at Smitty's. Let's start looking around Smitty's. Oh, and by the way, there's this pedophile guy. Let's go talk to him.
As Kristen mentioned, the police began questioning everyone in their apartment complex, and a girl told them that she had been with Brandy at a store called Smitty's. Because of this, the police focused their search efforts in the area of the store. They had a really hard time identifying any good leads in Brandy's case. Kristen told me how so many years of not knowing devastated her family.
Unfortunately, my family doesn't want to deal with any of this. And a lot of families are like that. So it's not like just my family, but you either want to just not relive it or you can't live to not fight for it. All I know is that I was robbed of everything. My mother died inside and I needed her. Nothing was ever the same. My entire family just sort of died. And we all just went through motions of life and was horrible for a really long time. I personally was on drugs for like 13 years. By the grace of God, I finally got clean and I got 6 years, 7 years in August. I know that God got me clean when he did so I would have the strength to fight for this because somebody needs to. Some families come really close together. They cling to one another and some families just can't handle it. They just can't take it. And everybody just sort of imploded. Everyone sort of went their own ways and was crazy for some time and then settled down. The damage is done. Like I'm forever scarred. It's just not fair. I don't have money and I don't have numbers, but I do have faith and I do have courage and I have the will to fight for her. Like, I feel like I'm fighting for her life as if I could save it. I just want her to have her day in court.
Poring over Brandy's case file for decades never brought detectives any closer to solving her case. But the key may just be hidden within the files of some other local unsolved cases. 2 days after Brandy disappeared, searchers found a badly decomposed body of a teenager in a pile of trash. She had been strangled to death. The identity of this teenager would remain a mystery for many years, and she was buried as Jane Doe 92-1169. She remained unidentified until 2011 when Maricopa County received a federal grant to research unidentified deaths. They used the funds to exhume her body along with many others. They were able to identify her as 16-year-old Shannon Almack. Shannon had never been reported missing. She had a really sad life. Her mother was raped at just 16 years old and became pregnant with Shannon. She handed Shannon over to Child Protective Services when she was just 3 years old. She was adopted by a family, but was eventually given back to CPS at the age of 12 because she had behavioral issues. After this, she bounced around from foster homes, group homes, and even a juvenile detention facility because, according to the police, she ran away more than 40 times. You're probably wondering why Shannon was never reported missing. She had run away from home, and that was reported to CPS, who never filed a police report. Eventually, CPS petitioned the court to relinquish their responsibility due to Shannon being a chronic runaway. When she was found, the police released a sketch, but no one ever came forward to identify her. Years later, when they decided to take a fresh look at the case, they began to go through runaway reports in the CPS files for the time frame around the discovery of her body. They thought that Shannon could be their Jane Doe, so they tracked down her biological mother, who gave them a DNA sample, which led to her identification. Shannon was murdered around the same time that Brandy went missing, and her case remains unsolved. Several months later, in November of that same year, a 22-year-old woman was reported missing after she went out for a bike ride and never came back. Her name was Angela Brasso. Angela's headless body was found, and her head was later located in the Arizona Canal several days later. Fast forward about 10 months to September of 1993. 17-year-old Melanie Burness went out for a bike ride, just as Angela had, and she too never made it back home. Her body was found the following day, also in the Arizona Canal. She had been stabbed to death. The murders of Angela and Melanie were referred to as the Canal Murders and went unsolved for many, many years. They had DNA evidence from both of these cases that tied them together. Over the years, detectives would run this profile through law enforcement databases, but they never got a match. In 2014, these cases heated up when investigators attended a conference and learned that they could analyze the DNA in a new way that could possibly bring them closer to identifying the killer. This is a fascinating part of the story. A genealogist worked to identify the possible surname of the killer by tracking the paternal lineage of the Y chromosome. This is how they came up with the last name Miller. And there was someone on their list of potential suspects with the last name Miller. His name is Brian Patrick Miller. They were able to obtain his DNA and found that it matched the profile of the Canal Killer. You may be wondering what this has to do with the disappearance of Brandy Myers. Well, Miller was living right around the corner from Brandy when she disappeared, going door to door. When Miller was apprehended, they started interviewing those who had known him. That's when his former wife came forward with a startling confession.
23 years later, we get a call from the Phoenix cold case detectives, and they have a man in custody. They have a confession from his ex-wife that describes in detail what he did to her, how this man, Brian Patrick Miller, also known as the Canal Killer, pulled my sister into the house and killed her and dismembered her and threw her in the trash. It's a lengthy confession. It gives detail that makes it like I have no doubt in my mind that it was Brandy.
Detectives asked Kristen if she wanted to know the story that his ex-wife had shared, and she said yes.
The exact confession that was told to me, and they asked me if I wanted to really hear it, and of course I do because she was my sister, was that she was pulled in the house and she was stabbed. So she was alive for all that, and then he slit her throat and that killed her. He wanted to keep her and continue to do sick things to her body and, you know, possibly have sex with her or whatever. So he put her in the bathtub. And he was so excited and elated from having taken her life that he turned on the hot water instead of the cold water. And the cold water would have slowed down her bleeding and allowed him to do whatever he wanted to do with her and then dismember her and drop her body parts together like he did with the other two women. But he used this hot water, which accelerated her bleeding, and she was bleeding too much for him to be able to really do this. So he was like, I got to get rid of the body. The neighbors started complaining about the smell. So he decided he would just cut her up in pieces and put her in black trash bags. And he stored her in his trash can until trash day. And then he put the trash can out for the trash man. And the neighbors complained about it again, like, your trash can smells really bad. And he just told them that there was rotten meat inside. And honestly, nobody's looking inside a trash can after you tell them that. So my sister went to the dump and we only found this out 23 years later. And it's 25 years now, almost 26, and nobody's going to dig up the dump from that long, you know. And even if they did, they wouldn't find her because they've gone to the dump looking for, like, you know, recent cases. They knew exactly where that load of trash was dumped and they couldn't find what they were looking for. 25 years later, they're just not going to ever find anything. And the house that she was murdered in, they tore that house up looking for DNA. But honestly, in 23 years, the house has been so extensively remodeled that it's not the same house anymore. So there's no DNA evidence there. But what we do have is his ex-wife, who's willing to testify that he confessed to her about killing Brandy and that the girl appeared to be mentally challenged, which I like to take offense to because she was my sister. But it just seals it that that was Brandy because she wasn't special ed and she did wear big glasses and she was a little slow. But I believe she would have lived and been just fine in life. When I was told about how she died, and I asked a lot of beat around the question type questions until I could just finally say, did Brandy suffer? The lady detective told me that she did. She said, yeah, she suffered greatly. But if it made me feel any better, he caused death quickly. You know, that doesn't make me feel better. It makes me feel more desperate. My best case scenario, you know, he would admit to doing this and then someday he would talk to me and tell me if she said anything. Like, everybody thinks I'm crazy, but I want to know. I want to know if she cried out for us. I want to know if she said anything. I also want to look inside that house that he killed her and see if it looks like I imagine it to look.
It's shocking to think that his wife would have withheld this information for all of those years.
She came forward with this information after he was arrested. And they asked her, like, why she had not came forward until now. And she said, well, one, I didn't know if I should believe him. Like, I didn't really believe him because he was really into S&M and weird cosplay stuff. And his S&M stuff had progressed into being pretty violent. And then that's why she eventually left him. And he had confessed to her about killing Brandy and other things that he had done. She's willing to testify that he had made this confession to her.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanish to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. In the initial stages of the investigation, Brian Patrick Miller had been spoken to about Brandy because he lived just around the corner. But since that other girl had told the police that she disappeared from Smitty's, they didn't focus on that area of the neighborhood. This is a case where, in hindsight, you can see how a false lead can really damage an investigation.
What really happened is that at the time, okay, there was a girl who, now I realize, over the last 3 years, I've been doing a lot of work for Brandy, and I'm putting a lot of pieces together, and I'm talking to people that I had lost contact with then, and finding Brandy's friends and realizing she had a whole life separate from me, you know, that I had no idea about. I just mean, like, she had friends, and, you know, I was mostly trying to avoid her or, you know, not play with her because I was a tomboy and she was really girly, and we just were on different pages. It was a girl who lived in our apartments. The police talked to her. Obviously, they talked to everybody in our apartment complex. So they talked to her, and she told the police that Brandy was with her and they had gone up to Smitty's. And so consequently, the police were looking in this direction, which took them in a whole different direction. They weren't even looking in our neighborhood. And there happened to be, like, a pedophile guy there. So they're looking at him and they're wasting all this time. You know, later I get a hold of that girl and I'm like, listen, nothing about this story. First of all, I don't even know who you are. We didn't hang out with you. She said that she lived in our apartment complex. And I'm like, that's how even more your story's not plausible. Because first she said that Brandy went to spend her money from the bookathon at the store on, like, candy and toys. And I'm like, you know, Brandy wouldn't have done that. You know, she was really interested in the prize at the end of the fundraiser. And that's why we were doing it. She wasn't like that. She was naive and she was quiet and she was really sweet. I told this girl, like, I understand that at the time you probably just wanted attention from the situation. A lot of people came out and just, you know, I don't know why people do that. They just want to attach themselves somehow or just get attention from the situation. So I said, you need to come forward and take that statement back. And she was like, I don't know why you're talking to me or why the police are talking to me, because I never made that statement. So I'm like, you absolutely did. And that's why they're reaching out to you. And that's why I am. In order for Brandy to have gone to that store, she would have had to go in a whole different direction and walk around the block in a different direction than the way that she went. By this girl having made this story up at the time, which I understand she was just a child and she wanted attention from the situation, and that's fine. But she's grown now, and I believe she just wants to distance herself from it, and she feels bad from having lied about it. So she's just saying, I don't remember that ever happening. But I don't know how you would forget, you know what I mean? They had our whole apartment complex taped off. There were police dogs and helicopters, and there was everything. And they talked to everybody in my apartment complex. So I don't know. And so she refused to take that statement back. I was pretty upset about it because it dampers Brandy's chances. At this point, she has all the power in the world to make all the difference. She needs to just woman up and take that back. But that's definitely why at the exact time, right when it happened, no, they were not looking in our neighborhood. So they're using their resources and their time and their effort, and they're looking in this area. You know, at some point they did come back to our neighborhood and start looking, you know what I mean? But I don't think any of us were looking in trash cans or anything like that. You never in your wildest dreams imagined that when you finally find out that this is what you're going to find out.
If you take away that sighting of Brandy at Smitty's, the last people to claim that they saw Brandy happened to be a couple who lived just 2 doors from Brian Patrick Miller.
We also have 2 elderly people that lived, that were the neighbors there in the neighborhood. And so Brandy was last seen 2 doors down walking toward his house. So the house after the house she had last been seen at was not home. the next house after that is Brian's house. So it's the only logical thing, you know. And I also, when she walked away, I watched her walk around the corner walking toward his house. And I was hanging off the balcony of our apartments. And at the time, you know, when I was only 11, and I had got that sinking feeling in my throat and like that pit you get in your stomach when something really bad is going to happen. And it's like that warning for you. But I was just a kid and I had no idea what that meant. So, you know, I just let her walk away and she never came home. It's just been really hard to know that the last words I said to her was, "You're a nerd and I can't be seen with you." It's like we were sisters and we loved each other. We were best friends, but we also picked with each other, and probably me more so than her. But you grow up and you're able to say, you know, "I'm really sorry that, you know, I was just a jerk all the time." And then you come together as adults. Now you're out in the world doing adult things, and it's just different. When you're kids, maybe you don't relate because you're on different levels. But now I just feel so bad because, you know, she never got to grow up.
When we go back and look at Miller's history, it's very disturbing. When he was just 15 years old, he was sent to a juvenile facility after being charged with criminal damage. He was released in March of 1989, and just 2 months later, at the age of 16, he stabbed a woman while she was walking to work.
When they questioned him about it and asked him, like, "Why did you stab her?" he said he wanted to know what it felt like. Like, okay, so you were just born sick or bred sick. I don't even know. Like, I can't speak to it. But so, yeah, he's got a string of stuff. Of he would jump out on women and try to catch them and try to stab them.
For that stabbing, he was sentenced to a juvenile facility and was released once he turned 18. When we look at Shannon's case, she was the victim who was found during the search for Brandy. They haven't been able to link Brian Patrick Miller to her murder yet, but it remains a possibility. She was found near the canal, just like some of the other victims. And both Shannon and Brian had spent time at the Adobe Mountain Juvenile Detention Center. Some have speculated that they may have met each other there. Detectives aren't only looking at Miller for cases in the Phoenix area. In the 90s, he and his wife moved to the Everett, Washington area. Do you think it's possible for someone with this history to stop killing? Back in 2000, a 14-year-old was walking to the bus stop early in the morning. As she was cutting through a bike trail, a man came out of the bushes right next to her. She immediately thought that he was creepy and looked dirty, like he had been lying in the dirt. She started walking faster, and he did too. This went on for several minutes, then he grabbed her and began stabbing her in the neck and stomach areas. She fought this man, and she fought hard. She was able to break free and kick the knife out of his hands. They both made a move for the knife, but she got to it first. She curled her body around the knife so that he couldn't take it back. He kept fighting her for it, and he eventually talked her into giving it to him with a promise that he wouldn't hurt her. He stabbed her again in the back and strangled her until she passed out. It's believed that another person on the trail interrupted this attack, which saved her life. She was in critical condition with very serious injuries, including 17 stab wounds. One of those stab wounds was just an eighth of an inch from her aorta, and part of her intestines had to be removed. Her case too went unsolved, but after Miller was identified for the Phoenix cases, she was shown his picture and said that she was 95% certain that he was her attacker. 2 years after this attack, a woman claimed that she was at a payphone to page a friend when a man approached her. He offered her a ride, and she accepted. He took her to his work, and they were the only ones there. When she went to use the phone, the man walked away. He came back, grabbed her from behind, and started stabbing her. She managed to get away, and Miller was arrested for this crime, but was later acquitted. He claimed that she came into his work to get money from him, and that she's the one that attacked him. He said that he only stabbed her in self-defense. Now that we know more about Miller's history, that seems doubtful. It makes you wonder if Brian Patrick Miller could be responsible for any other unsolved murders or missing persons cases. Miller later moved back to Arizona, and there are conflicting reports on exactly when he made that move. Locals knew who Miller was. He called himself the Arizona Zombie Hunter. He had even purchased a decommissioned police car and put the words Zombie Hunter on the side and decorated it with fake blood. Miller liked taking his zombie car to different conventions, but would also just drive it around town, dressed in various costumes, sometimes stopping to get his photo taken with the local police. There is some speculation that he could be responsible for the 2013 disappearance and murder of 19-year-old Adrienne Salinas. She had left her apartment and started walking toward a Tempe, Arizona gas station sometime after 4 a.m. on June 15, 2013. She was meeting a cab there, but when the cab driver arrived, she wasn't there. The driver called Adrienne, who said she was on her way, but she never showed up. Surveillance footage was recovered, and it's believed that it shows Adrienne walking through a parking lot, then a dark car following just 2 minutes later. Adrienne's body was located just a couple months later in a wash in Apache Junction. A friend of Miller's has pulled together information from his Facebook page that allegedly indicates that Miller was at a party the same night, just about a mile from where she disappeared. As it stands, Brian Patrick Miller is set to stand trial for the murders of Angela Brasso and Melanie Burness next month.
It's scheduled for April, but the likelihood that it's going to actually happen in April is pretty slim from what they're telling me.
The Phoenix Police Department submitted a recommendation for charges against Brian Patrick Miller in relation to Brandy's case, but the prosecutor declined to charge him due to a lack of evidence.
They want more evidence, and you know what? Coming up on in May, I mean, it's practically been 27 years, okay? There's not going to be more evidence. And my fear is that these two witnesses that placed her two doors down from his house, walking toward his house, are going to die soon because, you know, it's been 27 years. You know, I'm almost 40 now. So those guys are going to die and we won't have those witnesses anymore. And also that I have another friend that said Brandy had stopped by and asked if she could go, which is right along our route, which is, you know, about halfway up through the block, if she could go with her. And her friend said no. Her name's Katrina. She said she had things to do, so Brandy just kept going. We knew nothing for 23 years. And then, you know, after 23 years and they tell me and I find out and then they say, just wait. Just don't go to the media and don't do whatever you can do just yet. Let us exhaust all our avenues. And I didn't want to hurt Brandy's chances with anything. So I just said, okay. And I kept waiting and waiting. And it was like, we're trying to bring it to the prosecutor. It got pushed off. It got pushed off. This went on for 2 years. You know, they brought it to him once. He turned it down wanting more evidence. They brought it to him again. They turned it down wanting more evidence. You know, there's never going to be more evidence, and the evidence that they actually have right now, they collected back then, excluding the confession from his ex-wife that, you know, she's willing to testify. Like, what more do you want, in my opinion? You know, what's far-fetched to believe that this man that you already know through DNA evidence that cannot be disputed, that he is a sick man who killed and hurt these women in unspeakable ways, and he lived three blocks from me, and I walked by his house every single day going back and forth to school. And from his house, he could have seen us, could have been watching us playing at the two houses that we played in, because it was in view of his house. From the line of questioning that the police gave me, I gathered that he used to just be around the places that we were at, like the churches and stuff. Like, I believe he was watching us, you know? And I mean, how perfect would it be when, like, just one little girl showed up at your door? Like, nobody noticed, and you just pulled her in her house.
Even though the prosecutor has declined to proceed with charges in Brandy's case at this time, Kristen still travels to attend Miller's hearings.
So I've gone to his court dates. I've sat right across from him, you know, and everything inside me wants to scream and jump up and act a fool. But you can't because you have to keep your composure in the courtroom or they won't let you in there. You'll get banned. The problems with that is Brandy's not listed as a victim. So I have to sit on the other side of the courtroom with people that might be there supporting him. You know, and there's no victim's advocate for me because Brandy's not listed as a victim. When I have been told without doubt from the Phoenix cold case detectives, without doubt, that he killed her and down to detail, everything he did.
Kristen feels strongly that it's her job to fight for justice, and she's not giving up.
I refuse to be sat down in my aunt's living room and told all these details of what happened to my sister and then just go about my life. Like, you didn't just tell me that. Like, I can just live with that because I can't.
One thing that she's trying to do is to get public support behind her campaign for justice.
Basically, what I've been doing for the last 3 years is on my own trying to work a campaign, because the Phoenix cold case detectives have told me that the only way to persuade or to get the Maricopa County prosecutor, Bill Montgomery, to add Brandy's name to this is to create public pressure, like with breast cancer awareness or Black Lives Matter. If I had numbers like that, you know, if I could create a crowd like that, if I could get people to send letters and emails like that, then I would create change. I would create a public pressure. So that's what I've been trying to do. I have absolutely no family help. You know, I need to exhaust any efforts that I can possibly exhaust to see if I can't create this public pressure. So I've done so far, I've done numerous trips to Arizona. I've done news interviews with every single local news station out in Arizona and newspapers. I had a service for Brandy 26 years after she lost her life, and it was beautiful. You know, my daughter flew out for it. I made it really special, but again, like, Brandy's family didn't show up for that. That part's kind of heartbreaking, and I don't know why I necessarily need to say that, but I feel like it's front and center for me that when I'm fighting this fight, I'm not fighting alongside anybody else. You know what I mean? It's just hard. Right now, I'm planning a trip in April, and I will go out. I'll be gone through the 6th through the 14th in Arizona doing some campaigning for Brandy. I'm going to just ask people to write this letter to Bill Montgomery, the Maricopa County prosecutor. I put the address and the phone number and everything, and I'm like, that's all I need for people to do, you know, and how many people actually do it? And I've put that up on Brandy's page, and I've put it up on my page, and just not getting too far. My goal this time is to go out to Arizona, and I'm going to attend some large events like Pride and Bike Week, just because I know there's going to be thousands of people at those. I'm hoping to hit like 3 different really large events and collect 10,000 letters.
Kristen mentioned that she doesn't have the support of her family in this fight. It's very sad to think that she plans events to honor Brandy and ends up attending them alone.
In my mind, I'm like a Hallmark movie. Like, people come out in forces and, you know what I mean? And in the end, it's like just me and a sign.
When you look back at a case like this, after so much has been revealed, it's difficult to understand how someone like Brian Patrick Miller was able to fit into society for so long. How does someone so vicious hide in plain sight? One thing that Kristen mentioned to me was that he had affiliated himself with a religious community for a very long time, which may have been a good cover.
But it's like he used to affiliate himself with, at the time he was staying in a house that was owned by Mennonites, and they put him up. I don't know. I guess he was able to affiliate himself with religious people and make them believe he was a great guy. And to this day, they swear like they got the wrong guy. But there's no way. He's facing the death penalty right now for killing the other 2 girls. And they're looking at him for Shannon Almack.
Kristen told me about the regrets that she's held on to for many years.
You know, I hated myself for a lot of years, and you know, the longer I'm sober, the more the reasons I was using are clear to me. I blamed myself, and I never even knew. I never knew that, you know, I really did. I held it against myself that I let her walk away. And worse yet, the last words I said to her was, "You're a nerd, and I can't be seen with you." I knew instantly that she was gone. You know, I had that feeling because we were close. I always knew. You want to say you're holding out hope, and you want to hope and believe that maybe she's just one of these girls held captive in some weird tent city in someone's backyard. And, you know, maybe she has a couple of kids or something strange. That's just sort of something that I lived with. all my life until I finally found like forgiveness for myself. Like, I understand it wasn't my fault. You know, it's only 11, just a kid. I'm finally just coming to terms with all those things. And I don't know, the aftermath of it all is hard to digest.
I would typically end this episode by saying, what happened to Brandi Myers on May 26, 1992? But I don't think that's the mystery of this case any longer. I think the mystery here is who else could potentially be a victim of Brian Patrick Miller. Miller was arrested on January 13, 2015, at an Amazon warehouse where he worked as a packer. When they searched his home, they removed mountains of evidence because it appears that he was a hoarder. They've been sifting through all of that evidence with the hopes that something will prove valuable to these cases, or possibly others. News footage revealed police removing old, rusty bicycles. The two murdered women who had been out riding their bikes, those bikes were never found. Information regarding the bikes that were found at Miller's home has not been released. If you would like to support Kristen's fight for justice, you can follow her on Facebook, where she runs Justice for Brandi Myers. She has a video on YouTube where she shows the path that Brandi took the day that she disappeared. I recommend watching that. It really helps you visualize the area. I'll put these links in the episode notes. I'll also include the mailing address for the prosecutor if you would like to help Kristen by writing a letter. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Brandi Myers, please contact the Phoenix Police Department Missing Persons Unit at 602-534-2121. That brings us to the end of episode 118. I'd like to thank Kristen for taking the time to speak with me. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. Next week, I'm taking a much-needed week off, but I will be back the following week with a case from California. Thanks for listening.
She was easily picked on, you know, and I always watched her, and anytime I saw her crying or, you know, looking sad by herself, I was quick to find out what happened and who did what, and let me go take care of that, because nobody's going to pick on Brandi but me. I know how snotty that sounds, but I'm just making a realization of just that's how it was, you know. I was that little brat kid that liked to torment my sister, and you know, but she was also my best friend, and you know, anytime I was in trouble, and she would just stay inside and play with me. Like, she never had to do that. She could have just went out and played by herself or with her friends, but she stayed inside and played with me because she was my best friend. Everything about my life would be different right now. You know, my mother wouldn't have to be broken. We would still have this really great relationship that we had, you know, and everything changed in an instant. I feel like I'm fighting for my own justice as well. Like, it's the only thing that makes sense that there was a serial killer who lived three blocks from my house. Brandi went knocking door to door in my neighborhood to collect money. What else makes sense? Nothing.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.